it's time for Arts Live and Local. This is Carol, your host. Happy to be here. Got some music to start us off from none other than the Byrds. It's the seasonal song that so many people recorded. The words originate in Ecclesiastes. Pete Seeger put it to music. Turn, turn, turn. And considering what's going on politically, I think it is very, even more timely than usual. So let's turn this thing around. Let's bring a new year of peace and talking and putting away the guns. There's a time for every purpose under heaven. A lot of this is metaphorical, but the time for peace is the one I'd like to focus on because, it's what we need. And it is a very particular time right now in the Jewish tradition. It's the Jewish New Year, and tonight and tomorrow are the holiest day of the year, the day of at-one-ment or atonement. It's an opportunity to figure out how we want to change things and hope that we're all in good stead and the book will be written in the book of life. I wish that for everyone, doesn't matter what you're following or none is, may you be written in the book of life for peace and health and joy. And speaking of joy, my first guest is Cynthia Lahti, and yes, that's Lahti, a very familiar name around here, especially out where I live in Brownsmead,
yeah.
Because we have Hilda Lahti School,
yeah.
So, and all the Lottie Brothers and lots of folks. And so Cynthia is got a, she's a multimedia artist, and she has a show that will be opening tomorrow night at Imogen Gallery, which is on 11th and Marine Drive. Lovely gallery, small gallery, big paintings. So got a lot of strength. And judging from what I'm seeing, I don't know what the size is. Oh, okay.
They're not that large. The largest is 11 by 17.
Right. But they are large.
They are
in
large
content.
In that
I mean, I'm looking
at
this
going,
whoa.
So, yeah.
Wonderful landscape. So I'm going to let Cynthia tell you how this came about. The name of the show is Daivasalo Paintings, and they are watercolor, colored pencil, and they're from Southwest Finland. But I understand you actually were in Europe for a residency in Berlin in ceramics.
Yeah, I do a lot of different practices in my work. My main focus tends to be on sculpture, but lately I've been doing more landscapes. I really enjoy the practice of it. It's really challenging, and it's fun when I go places to do it.
Sure.
So
you take a sketch pad everywhere you go.
Yeah, so that's what happened.
That's a lot easier than carrying a bunch of clay. Or,
exactly.
So when I read that your residency was in ceramics, I was thinking of turning. You're talking about sculpture then?
Yeah. I do ceramic sculptures. I was lucky enough to get into a residency in Berlin, and I went to the residency in the fall. And before that, I went to Finland in August and was in visited relatives whom I had met before. And
what part of Finland?
It's Taivasalo, which is about an hour west of Turku on the Baltic Sea.
Wow.
It's a coastal town. And so, so I stayed with them in their summer home, which is the home where they grew up and is the home where my I'm going to try to get this right. My mother's sister's daughter lived there and
so
raised
like your
her
first
friends.
Cousin.
So, right.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a family home. That I had visited when I was 13, and I visited when I was 35. This is the third time I've been to Taivasalo. So I knew that I wanted to spend some time there and really, you know, look around and see the places that my grandparents, who immigrated from there in 1910, might have been. And so I did that. I was lucky enough. My cousin, I'll just call him my cousin. Taimo was gracious enough. Taimo and his twin Taya were to show me around. And he is actually very interested in his heritage, and which is, of course, my heritage. Mm-hmm. So he knew a lot of really very interesting things.
Was yours
about
the only
family,
part of the family that went to the United States, or did many?
Many people came from Taivasalo, and my cousin has researched quite. Yes, some stayed behind. So of that, I think there were maybe eight children in my eight brothers and sisters of my grandmother, and I think I might get this wrong. Three came to Astoria.
Right.
Near as I can tell, the first one came at about the turn of the century, and then the others followed. My grandmother came, I think, around 1910. I know my grandfather came in 1910, and they came about the same time. And they're both from Taivasalo, so they're both from the same area. I don't know if they knew each other.
So is Taivasalo a town or a region?
It's a small town. And I'd be surprised if they didn't know each other, but I don't know what their relationship. Yeah, because it is small. It's a small town.
Right. And are there a lot of lattes in
area? There's a lot of lattes in Finland because it means bay, and a lot of the names are based on, you know, sort of your location.
Sure.
My grandfather immigrated under his kind of name, which was Villalatti, which actually I found out means cold bay.
Mm-hmm.
So, eventually they dropped the villa, and we just became Latti. So
okay.
I'm not. It's I'm not related to any of the Lochtes around this area because of that. And
so your family that did come to Astoria, though, they left? They moved somewhere else?
My father, well, my grandparents came here. They had my father. So my father was an only child.
Right. And then he moved elsewhere.
Yeah, he moved to Portland like 58. Okay. So I didn't grow up in Astoria.
But you grew up in Portland.
But I grew up in Portland. And had a strong Astoria connection through friends.
Well, and now
family.
You're renewing it by having an art show here.
Oh, yeah. So it felt right to bring the drawings I did in Tyvasola back to Astoria and show them in Astoria.
They look wonderful from what I saw on the web and the card here.
Thanks.
And that's why I said big, because although Christos's paintings really are physically big.
Yeah, it's all relative.
But
really.
Yours is, the scene is big.
Yeah, yeah. And when I was there, I wasn't necessarily trying to create a body of work that I would show, but I was so inspired by the place and the things I was seeing that I had a couple days there by myself where I just went around and did these drawings, and I was very happy with them.
What time of year was this?
It was in August.
Really?
So, I think I got there on August 8th.
This is...
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not snow. It's, and she's looking
just
at a picture
space.
That looks like it's white space. That's rocks, because Finland is very rocky because a glacier came through and wiped away a lot of the topsoil. And so there's a lot in the forest. There's lots of rocks.
Some large boulders.
Really
almost.
Large boulders. Yeah. It's very interesting. Like they don't have to put foundations on the things they build. You would just see saunas like just built right on top of the rocks. And I'd be like, you must bolt them down. And my cousin was like, why? We don't need to. And because they're not on a earthquake area either. To me, I just stunned by that. But the rocks, actually, I love the sort of landscape of the rocks with the forests. And then sometimes I could see some of the paintings are of the Baltic Sea where I was on the, with the islands. It's just a gorgeous setting.
And is this a farmhouse in the background?
That's the sauna. That's the
sauna.
Old sauna.
Okay. That's a good size old.
They take their sauna seriously.
Yes, I gather. Did you, how long were you there, by the way?
I think there 10 days in Tyvasalo and then some time in Helsinki.
Mm-hmm. And you move seamlessly between the different art forms.
Mm. Yeah, drawing's I've always drawn, and it's a way for me to sort of understand things, and it's an exercise for me. I feel like it's exercising when I draw. It helps me understand ideas that I might make sculptures of. Mm-hmm. So the landscapes, although, I'm not going to do a sculpture of the landscape, there's a lot of the similar kind of thought process goes into drawing that goes into, or painting that goes into my making of sculptures. I'm pleased by the landscapes is very challenging for me. So I'm always happy to sort of be challenged by it. And, so it is a part of my process. When I make a sculpture, I always do drawings of the thing I'm going to make before.
Okay.
But like I said, like these will exist on their own and not become sculptures.
Well, you don't have to make sculptures because the rocks are already sculpted, right?
<That's> right.
Someone did it for you. So when you're doing your sculptures though, this was clear.
Yeah.
You went there, you saw these scenes, and you just, there's no question, the brushes, the pencils come out.
Yeah.
And there's no, so what about your sculptures when you're, do you find an object or a subject, or do you, what's your process?
Yeah, I use images that I find evocative, and the images are usually of figures, and they're usually, I find them in older books and magazines. So that's the starting point. And then, like I say, I do drawings and sort of, I look at a lot of sculpture and try to get ideas for how I could incorporate what I love and sculptures I see into my sculpture. So there's a kind of a combination of sort of events that occur, and then I will sculpt a piece. So,
and we're talking about there's ceramics. So you're taking clay and bringing it together.
Right.
As opposed to taking away
from it's an additive. And lately I've been adding paper to my sculpture so that's kind of I started that in Berlin and I'm continuing that in my studio now. So it's still ceramic based, but it also includes sort of my love of the found paper. So that's been very interesting.
And what size are the sculptures?
They're about a foot or
They're smaller.
They're not huge. Yeah. I usually don't like making things I can't physically carry myself. And there's something about clay that likes to be a certain size. Mm-hmm. It can be large, but it really sort of, I feel like I makes the sculptures feel like they're, I've thought about doing larger pieces, and every time I try it, it's never successful. So
let's back up a little bit. Yeah. You've studied art. I can just feel it from everything you're saying that you actually had academic studies.
Yes,
no, you
I
have
did.
The vocabulary.
Yeah.
And also the process.
Right. Yeah.
You know, what you were talking about, working problems out,
right.
problem solving with your drawing.
Right.
Like that. So give us a little bit of background. Did you always think, I'm going to be an artist when
I
grow up?
Yeah, I think I kind of did.
When you were a little girl?
I don't know if I was aware that a goal was to be an artist, but I really loved making things. Mm-hmm. And both of my parents were really sort of very creative and, encouraged that in their children.
Good.
So it was like, I was allowed to mm-hmm. use that sort of great creativity that all children have mm-hmm. to its fullest. So, it felt like art was a very, a special thing for me in mm-hmm. my childhood. So I think that carried on into
and you
me
got the
deciding
support
to be. Yeah. And I got the support.
What about in school?
And the problem solving too. I mean, my father grew up here in Uniontown and the Youngs River, kind of both places and at various times. And my mother was trained as a home economist, mm-hmm. so both were very sort of hands-on, mm-hmm. Native Oregonian kind of thinkers and doers. And so I think that really definitely taught me, mm-hmm. to problem solve that way. I mean, I do teach. I teach collage classes. Yeah.
Just independently?
I've been doing both a little bit out of my studio and also at the Oregon College of Arts and Crafts. Mm-hmm. And at Manuka, the Creative Arts Community Program at Manuka every summer, which is a wonderful program. If people aren't aware of it, it's well worth looking into. So
we had the Arts and Education had a conference there one time.
Oh, nice.
Our annual conference. And the word Manuka, actually, Manuka means rest.
Oh, does
it? In Hebrew,
cool.
It may have another meaning.
Nice.
In an Indian language,
that's
don't know.
That's nice, yeah.
But it was a wonderful space and place.
Yeah.
I remember Obo Adi, spoke at that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a beautiful location, and, the students are wonderful, and mm-hmm. it's a great joy to teach there. So.
Wonderful. So that means you don't have another day job. You're
Sometimes I do other work. I mean,
pick up some cash to focus.
I try to focus mostly on my work. Yeah. I mean, that's
well, you got enough of it.
Yeah,
so
I do
it's
have a
great.
Lot of it.
I'm speaking with Cynthia Lotti, and she has a show opening at Imogen Gallery, which is on 11th and Marine Drive. And this is tomorrow evening, which is Arts Night Out, and there will be lots of galleries showing goodies, including Lightbox opening with Photocraft and the Old Town Framing with Reba Owen and Carl Kaiser and Laura Buchan are continuing at Riversea, and maybe I'll have some more for you later. Cynthia's focus is Taivasalo paintings from her ancestral home in southwest Finland, the municipality in southwest, and it's watercolor and colored pencils. Is that what you would say?
Yeah.
Because I saw you had said something about mark making, and we talked about that with another artist last week.
Yeah.
Do you use that in these paintings or no?
Yeah, I mean, mark making to me is just sort of how the mark goes on the page. And so I think with these, I tried to be really loose, and I think mm-hmm. that's why I was excited by them and why they felt successful to me, is that I was able to kind of capture what I was seeing with the marks I was making. And yeah. and being not, I mean, usually I get really tight when I'm doing landscapes, and that's my biggest sort of issue that
even
I have.
Even in watercolor?
Yeah, yeah. I'm really pretty, I'm too tight. And so here I was just so relaxed, and I was so like, oh, this is, this place, it was so interesting to draw the land. The landscape was interesting to me. So I really was able to really let down a lot of the guards. I mean, I did a series of paintings as well in Berlin, and they're completely different. Because Berlin is just a completely different place, and I was in my head went to a different place in Berlin. But so that's why I mean these feel very, very special to me for that, just for artistically, but also just you know because I was drawing these scenes that my grandparents would have seen.
And are you? Do you feel that you're now able to? Because I agree, these are. I mean, you can clearly see they're totally representational and yet they have
a nice
easiness
to
them.
There's a balance to them lovely. I think where I was able to kind of capture
it's
things
not a photographic
mark, but,
image
and really that for me is not
so what do you think though but what do you think now that you've done this so successfully can you, is there a takeaway for you that
I mean there is
to
because
transplant to
somewhat but
we'll see.
I mean I've been doing landscapes since I got back, and the landscapes I do in Oregon are really different from this. And I think there's something,
maybe you need to come back to Astoria.
I know. Well, I just did one up by the bridge.
Okay.
And it was okay.
Okay.
You know, it's all right. Yeah,
just pretend, go to Fintown and you'll...
Yeah.
Okay. Well, again, Cynthia Lotte will be at Imogen Gallery. You can visit with her, meet her. The opening at Imogen is 5 to 9. Some of the galleries are 5 to 8. Lightbox is 6 to 9. So just come on into Astoria and wander around the galleries. Usually there's a map. And by the way, I wanted to congratulate you. I understand you got a Hallie Ford Family Foundation in 2013. That's this year. Good for you.
Thank you. It's
excellent.
It's a huge honor.
Yes. Well,
thanks.
You're doing good.
Thanks.
as we say. Thanks so much for coming in, Cynthia.
Thank you for
congratulations
having me,
on the show. You bet. I look forward to seeing it.
Thanks.
And I've got some music for you. That's related to my next guest, and that will be music of Carl Maria von Weber, played by David Schifrin on the clarinet. David Schifrin won't be here, but somebody else fabulous will be, so have a listen. KMUN, KTCB. Again, the clarinet music, and you will be hearing, well, I'm going to let Robert Brake tell you what you're going to be hearing and also why you're going to be hearing it. So welcome, Dr. Robert Brake,
nice
who
to
is
be here.
A board member and past president of the Water Music Festival. And they are going to be having a special event on the 16th, which is Monday. Is that right?
Monday, 7:30 p.m. at Hilltop Auditorium in
Ilwaco. Okay. And this is a free concert, and it will the proceeds will benefit any proceeds that come in. Maybe people are going to be asked for donations,
yeah,
or will benefit school music programs in the area. So you have two young musicians coming. They're not as, you know, when we say young, we, you know, 14-year-olds. No, these are young adults, soprano Rachel Policar, and clarinetist Stefan Van Sant. And I was a little surprised because these are, let's see, I know that the ladies, what's the story?
Musical Club of Seattle.
Yeah, there it is. Ladies Musical Club of Seattle, a 124-year-old nonprofit corporation of women in music. So I'm thinking, how did Stefan squeeze in here, the clarinetist? Did they run out of women, or he's just so fabulous that
It's a women's organization that sponsors young men and women who are on the rise as professional musicians. They've done this competition, a six-state competition for 24 years, and about 40 musicians sent in tapes, auditioned. Of those 40, the two who won will be on the Western Tour, which we're featuring on Monday night, the 16th at 7:30 in Ilwaco. By the way, the Ladies Musical Club, just for your information, previously sponsored high-profile visiting artists with names like Pablo Casals,
yeah,
Marilyn Horn,
yeah,
Paderewski, Rachmaninoff,
yeah,
and Rubinstein.
Yeah, so, not too shabby, eh?
Not shabby at all.
Do you think they sponsored them when they were young?
No, when they were well-known in Europe, but not known in America.
Okay.
And so Seattle, that organization welcomed them and premiered them.
Fabulous, yeah. That's wild. So have you heard the music of these folks?
Yes. Yes,
I've
heard
a
Rachel on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
She's a 25-year-old mm-hmm. soprano. I don't have anything from Stefan Van Sant. He's a 27-year-old clarinetist. Understand, these are on the rise, so they don't have CDs out yet, but they're starting to be recognized. We're trying to promote their appearances and let them serve as role models for the children in the music programs on the Long Beach Peninsula.
Yeah, fabulous. So this is the concert. Do you know they won't be playing together, I presume? They're each going to have a set? Is that it?
The first half will feature the soprano, Rachel.
Tell us what she sings mostly.
She has she's assumed the title character in three world premieres. She has attended the Manhattan School of Music and has earned a number of awards, including first place in this year's New York Lyric Opera Theater National Competition.
Wow.
And was also a semifinalist in this year's Joy in Singing Competition. So she'll be doing songs by Hugo Wolf, Leonard Bernstein, and for the Mozart lovers, two arias from Don Giovanni should be a fun first half.
Mm-hmm.
The second half features our clarinetist, who has performed in Europe and at the Aspen Music Festival, National Orchestral Institute, and other venues, and is a chamber musician and highly regarded music educator in the Seattle area.
Okay. So they both... do they both live in Seattle then? No.
They live in Washington.
In Washington. So I was just wondering whether the competition, you said, you know, 40 musicians from a six-state area.
Yeah, the
whether,
competition includes Alaska and the Northwest states.
But Washington got it.
Washington happened that the two of them were winners this year.
Yeah.
Incidentally, 2 years ago, we also had the Ladies Music Club winners, and fantastic performance in Ocean Park and Oysterville. And we had a 20-year-old violinist named Melody Lee and a fantastic 25-year-old tuba player. And
nice.
The children loved it.
I bet. So there will be children brought in to be in the audience, but this is open for everyone. It's a free concert.
Open for everyone.
And it's happening this Monday, 7:30 p.m. at Hilltop Auditorium in Ilwaco. Now, is that part of the high school or the school, Hilltop Auditorium?
Yes, okay. That's our auditorium. And on Tuesday morning, the 17th, the musicians will perform at the Long Beach Elementary School, where we'll have probably 75 to 100
students,
young ones, listening to
nice.
A singer and a clarinetist.
Right.
And then they'll do a program for the band and choir and other students at the middle senior high school in Ilwaco.
Okay, now that is not open to the public, I would
Well, presume. They could come if they want, but
you have to check in at the
that
office
would be an interesting experience
kind of
because one of the reasons we booked these award-winning musicians is they are not that much older than the students mm-hmm. that they're appearing before.
Yeah.
So they can serve as role models.
Absolutely.
And they can ask, on Tuesday morning, we have short performance and question and answer. And it's amazing the kinds of good questions these students will ask.
Sure. And how is the music program on the peninsula? Is it alive and well?
No, it's alive and well. We have 5 events this year, including this special one. And the first one was our Music in the Garden tours in July.
Yes.
And that was
Someone
wonderful.
Someone was here for that, yeah.
And we had Jazz and Oysters on August 18th. And this event next Monday night at 7:30 in the Ilwaco.
And then when is Water Music Festival itself? Isn't that in October?
Yeah, the major festival will be on October 11th and 12th.
Okay.
And just to give your listeners a quick overview of what we're doing there, Friday night in Ilwaco at the Inn at Harbor Village, which is just a few blocks south of the...
Diane Marshall is actually going to come in and,
on
the 4th and tell everything. So just give us a quick overview.
Yeah, well, we'll do 3 concerts. One is a jazz quartet.
Mm-hmm.
The other is a barbershop quartet called Social Insecurity at Oysterville.
Oh, how fun. Yeah.
We're going to sell out on that one quickly. And the third one will be a terrific chamber trio called Tangletown Trio. And for two of these, we will have young artists performing before the main event.
Oh,
and
yes.
At the Friday night concert, we'll have the North Coast Chorale as well.
And
the last one will be at Ledbetter, which will be a very prestigious dress-up affair with fine wine, terrific music, and a beautiful sunset.
Oh, my goodness. A guaranteed beautiful sunset.
We're proud of our venues and our All-American.
Robert is guaranteeing a beautiful sunset. That means no clouds in the
we'll
sky.
We'll have it. We'll have it. October 12th. Mark your calendar.
There you go. Thank you so much for coming in. Thanks for being part of this fabulous Water Music Festival. Again, this coming Monday at Hilltop Auditorium in Ilwaco, 7:30 p.m., of course, get there earlier so you can find a seat. And it is clarinetist Stefan Van Sant and soprano Rachel Policar, award winners of the Ladies
Club of Seattle.
Ladies Musical Club of Seattle. I do get a kick out of that, I must say.
If they need more information,
yes,
check yesterday's or Wednesday's edition of Coast Weekend. There's a feature story
about
the concert.
Yeah. Oh, good.
Go to watermusicfestival.com. Or call me at 360-665-2784. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
2784?
665-2784.
Okay, great. Thank you, Robert Brake from the Water Music Festival. You bet. And this is KMUN Astoria, KTCB Tillamook. And as I mentioned, on the 4th of October, Diane Marshall will be coming in from the also from the Water Music Festival organization to talk about the grand concerts that are coming up very soon. Got a little music for you right now from Leonard Cohen. And again, this is part of the liturgy for this time of year. And then my last guest, who has a fabulous documentary to talk about.
And who a fire? Who by a water? Who in the sunshine? Who in the nighttime? Who by high ordeal? Who by common trial? Who in your merry, merry month of May? Who by very slow decay? And who shall I say is calling? Lonely slip, who by barbiturate, who in these realms of love, who by something blunt, who by avalanche, who by powder, who for his greed, who for his hunger, and who shall I say is calling? Who by accident? Who in solitude? Who in this mirror? Who by his latest command? Who by his own hand? Who in mortal chains? Who in power? And who shall I say is calling?
Very familiar voice, fortunately for us, of Leonard Cohen with the liturgy from the Yom Kippur holiday, holy day. And as I mentioned, my last guest is Mark Warren, who is here to talk about, well, actually, he's here to celebrate his birthday. Happy birthday, Mark, all
Thank
over the world.
Thank you very
now
much.
Now people know it's
yeah.
your birthday.
We've been having a great time today
oh, good,
also.
Good, good. That is as it should be. You know?
And looking forward to
okay.
our 10 minutes.
Okay. So Mark created a movie, a documentary. I have been fortunate enough to see it. I'm one of the few people, I think, who've seen it around here, so I feel very honored. And you all will have the opportunity to see it. Well, not everybody listening, because you need to be somewhere in this neighborhood. But it is coming up on this coming Wednesday night, the 18th, at Rivers End Studio, which is 399 31st, basically 31st and the water. So you have to get into Alderbrook. And I'm going to let Mark tell you about it. I just want to mention a little bit that this is a documentary about his mother, Sadie Riegel, who survived World War II, quote, hidden in the spotlight, unquote, of famous Paris Cafe, of a famous Paris Cafe. She was considered the best dancer in Paris. So it's very, very powerful. It's very beautiful. And it's fascinating. So, Mark, congratulations on the fantastic film. Now, you finished it when?
This we finished back in 2004, and then we revised it a little bit more recently mm-hmm. on that one. Just one other thing while we're here. If anyone would like to go and look online and Good. See some information there, it's at www.riverszenyoga.com. That's riverszenyoga. com.
Yeah. You do have to spell it, because that is the strangest kind of thing. It almost looks Hungarian with an S-Z in the middle.
That's
but
right.
It's Rivers Zen. And yeah, that would be a good way to catch it. But in the meantime, I want you to tell us, in your own words, live, where did this come from? How did you come up with the possibility? This is an enormous project. So
it was an enormous project, and frankly, my primary place of working was in the theater. And I had written a bunch of material about my mother during the war, and I'd started to look at some other material, and Kevin Keating, who's an Academy Award-winning film maker, we met, and he listened to what I'd been saying, and he said, "You have to make a documentary about that." And I said, "Well, someone else should maybe do a documentary right. about that." And literally, within about 6 weeks, we were making the movies, and actually wow. not just the one, Dancing Lessons, about my mother, but two other films that were related to the time during the Second World War in World War II. So it was an extraordinary change in my life.
I think, yeah.
And one of the ones I'd been most interested in working on was something about my mother. And you mentioned a couple of things. My mother was actually born in Kimberley, South Africa.
Oh,
and,
my goodness.
And had a family that had escaped from Lithuania.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And were in South Africa. She saw a performance of the Ballet Russe, and she decided that's what she wanted to do with the rest of her life. And my Oy. Mother was a very she just passed away a year ago at 95.
Mm. Mashallah, wonderful.
And so she went first to London and then to Paris, and she was accepted into the Ballet Russe de Monte Carlo, which was about wow. the top level dance company in the world.
How old was she?
She was, boy, what was it, 1917? She was just into her 20s mm-hmm. at that point. She went back to Paris. She was all happy, and yeah. she was going to, as she said, have her career in the Ballet Russe. And 2 months later, the Nazis marched into Paris. And
okay, so now what year is this?
We're talking about...
Was she born in 1917? Is that what you
that's
said?
That's correct,
oh, okay,
yeah.
Okay,
and then
gotcha.
We're...
We
exactly,
got it, okay. 37, so right in the end of the 30s. Yep, that
exactly,
was it.
Exactly,
yep. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay.
As wow. my mother said, she really had never thought that much about being Jewish. Mm-hmm. It was not her. She was having her career in the Ballet Russe. And all of a sudden, her background became something important to mm-hmm. her. And one of the gentlemen that ran her club that she was working on, the Bal Tabaran, which no longer exists anymore, but it at the time was a kind of high class version of a dance hall,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and. So the gentleman, Pierre Sandrini, said to her, "You know, I will take care of you during the war, but you may not register.
Mm-hmm,
you can't
mm-hmm,
do that."
Mm-hmm.
And my mother said, "You know, and that's what I did." And she became part of a small group
of dancers who were Jewish or part Jewish, who were basically performing in the spotlight at this point and having a very strange experience where they were Jewish, but they were performing for Nazi officers almost every night.
So when he said you must not register, he meant as a Jew.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah,
because Jews were supposed to step forward and register, and of course most of them were outed if they didn't. So these dancers apparently were protected, and so they were not forced to register. But yeah, living a double life, kind of, huh?
Absolutely, and for many of them, like my mother, they became very active in the resistance to the Nazi occupation, and also specifically in helping pass people from one place to another, because there were many Jews who were smuggled through Paris, and then they had to be gotten out of Paris, basically.
With the Vichy government there. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And remember that by the, I think, 1942, there was a Vichy government only in the south of France, and Paris was directly under the Nazi occupation.
Okay. Wow. So dance, was dance still, I mean, it had been her passion, total passion. I mean, it brought her from South Africa back to Europe and everything. Did it remain that way for her life? I think there was a guy in there somewhere, too, wasn't there?
Oh, absolutely.
I seem to recollect from seeing the movie. It's been a couple of years now, but yeah.
Absolutely.
But
so,
the dance was still...
Absolutely, absolutely. What was different was that she suddenly had essentially a music hall career, and she was one of the top dancers in the Bal Tabarin. And in the middle of World War II, she met a guy named Frederick Apgar, and they became a dance team, a very successful dance team, and they got together for about a month, and Frederick Apgar was someone who had many possible people
liaison
to go for. Liaison, absolutely. But as my mother said, they had a very successful dance act.
There you go. That's what counts, really. So, how did it resolve? She lived till she was 95. Mm-hmm. How did she end up transitioning from that life and ending up in the United States? You came from somewhere and living out the rest of the war.
Living out the rest of the war, as I said, she really helped a lot of people. And at the same time, she was working in the Bal Tabarin till very close to the end of the war. Then it was closed down because it was an awful lot of electricity, which was not available. And at that point, there was a gentleman in the Paris Nazi hierarchy that helped some of the dancers just to the extent of letting people know that something was about to happen. And that was essentially what happened to my mother. And she was told that she'd better get out of Paris. And her dance partner found a place for them outside of Paris. And one day, some American soldiers knocked on the door and asked where they were and what the directions to Paris were. And there's a very charming picture of them. They brought out some wine, like good French people. And they're two... American GIs, and after that, everyone went into Paris and celebrated.
Oh, wow. So, okay, now, the materials that you used for this film, was your mother able to preserve? Where did all those fabulous photos come from? And it was amazing to see some of that stuff.
What was extraordinarily lucky in terms of the material we used in Dancing Lessons, There were several. One was that Frederick Apcar, mm-hmm. her boyfriend, was shooting very good photographs all through the war.
Ah.
It's an extraordinary collection of, yeah. of photographs, both from the Beltabarin, from the streets of Paris.
Mm-hmm.
It's really quite extraordinary and quite unusual, given the time and mm-hmm. what was going on elsewhere. So we had such rich material that we were able to do a lot of things in the documentary that really is not easy to do.
Yeah, and to access. Yeah, most
yeah,
people
absolutely.
Wouldn't have access to that material. So your mother died a year ago, at 95.
95.
Mashallah, that's wonderful. How long, when did she come to the States?
1948.
Okay.
She came with her dance partner, Frederick Apcar. By that point, they were really not getting along at all. But they, as they said, had a very successful dance
there
routine.
You go. Yeah.
And my mother was a little sick of being in Paris at that point, and she met my father, and they had a terrible fight in a Jewish deli downtown.
In where?
In New York.
In New York,
in New York,
okay.
Right outside the place that my mother was working, and they had a huge fight in a Jewish deli downtown. They were asked to leave the Jewish deli, which takes a little work generally. And they went their different ways. And I think 2 weeks later, my mother moved in with him.
Oh, passion. It's all about passion.
It's
right?
all about passion, absolutely.
And that's fabulous. And that was way back. And your mother's English, how was that when she came to this country? Did she?
Well,
have?
she was from South Africa.
Of course.
It was more of a British accent.
Yeah,
and that changed gradually.
Yeah. But I was forgetting that part. I was thinking she was French speaking, and they don't bother with English.
She is French speaking.
Oh,
and,
I bet.
And very,
oh, yes.
very. It's lovely to see her with both, actually.
Oh, that's marvelous. Okay, well, let's remind folks now that we've gone through. I mean, I'm just delighted that you're finally getting to show this film. Folks, you have the opportunity to see this on Wednesday evening at River's End Yoga Studio on 399 31st Street. And there's more to it, too. Not only is this a beautiful and interesting and exciting film, but there are a couple more parts to this evening. First of all, I believe before the film, Dolores Villarreal Levine and John Orr will be opening with French ballads, as only Dolores from Acoustica can do. She's quite fabulous. And also, the other part is that this is a benefit for the Meg Patterson Cancer Fund. Do you want to say something about that?
Well, my husband Mark wanted to do something to benefit the Cancer Fund. I'm fighting cancer now, again.
Mm-hmm.
It's metastatic now, breast cancer. So it's really great that the River's End people decided to put this on. I think they are also doing a week of events.
Mm-hmm. For this National Cancer Foundation
right.
Stretch for the Cure.
Right.
Yeah.
And so this event benefits my fund.
Right.
And then also people can go online and make donations to my fund as well, or they can order the film, which would also help the fund.
And what's the online?
I think if you go to the River's End site,
there are links to all of those things,
which makes it
and
simpler.
Meg is well known in this community also for theater, not film, and was very involved in directing and also helping to run the River Theater for a time. And have you done any theater recently?
The last projects that I did were with Upward Bound, with
that's
the students
right.
there
the Shakespeare.
Doing Shakespeare,
that
which
was fantastic.
You interviewed us for.
Yes. That was wonderful, the Thank Women you. Of Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
And And there were a couple of guys in there, too. Yeah. So you let them in. So, right. So this is quite a gift package this evening. So check it out. Put it on your calendar. I highly recommend the whole thing. Music, the film, and then the purpose. Well, of course, there are many purposes to this, but the benefit for the Cancer Fund for Meg. So thank you so much, Mark. I'm thrilled that this is out, and I know that once some people see it, they're going to say, oh my God, I want everybody to see this. So let's start showing it and making it possible to share with other people. It's kind of tricky around here sometimes, but I think once it gets started, that's what will happen. So thanks for coming in.
Thank you,
and
Carol.
Happy birthday, Mark.
And thank you again.
And a happy and a healthy new year to you both.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
you. Okay. And it is almost time to go. I wanted to play a tune for you from what's going on this weekend. This 15th on Sunday is actually... 15 de septiembre is the 1 to 5 at St. Mary's Star of the Sea. That's on 15th and Grand in Astoria. And we have Mariachi Corona Continental, a mariachi band is coming. This is being put on by a number of groups, including your community radio station and the... Consejo Hispano de Loa Colombia, Hispanic Council, Fort George. There are tamales from the Hispanic Council, Coastal Family Health Center, and it's going to be a delightful event. 1 to 5 this Sunday. Have a listen.
Ya viste ya tu marido.